Hi, welcome back, everyone.
What's up, guys?
As per usual, this week is an interesting week. If you guys haven't noticed, there's a lot going on. There's all sorts of things happening in the news. It's going to be interesting because we're actually not going to talk about some of the biggest things that you may have heard about, such as Alex Jones and Joe Rogan. We're going to keep the conspiracies to the conspiracy theorists, although a lot of interesting things did happen during that podcast. If that's something you're interested in, go check it out.
It wasn't just that. There's stuff with the Trump administration, Michael Cohen. We're going to talk about different things today. I think things that aren't getting as much attention and just other articles that we find interesting.
Well, not just interesting, but you know that our goal here is to talk about things that impact your life and to start to give you that mindset. That's what we're trying to build here, is that mindset, so that every one of you can read articles or learn some piece of new information and already know how it affects you and how it's going to like impact your future and the decisions that you make. So hopefully this podcast becomes something that you listen to in the future simply because it's interesting. But for now, it should be something that starts to cultivate this, the way you think about things and the way you view ideas and the way that you interact with world events. And then in the future, you'll just listen because it's interesting, but you already have this, the mindset and the patterns of thinking that allow you to do what we do here on your own. We'll start off with one of those patterns. This is Nick was reading something that kind of showed another person's unique way of thinking about the world. And it's a pretty good pattern. And I think that is very effective. So Nick, why don't you start us off with the Keystone Habit?
All right, guys. So I was reading this article on thehustle.co. That's just C-O, no M. And basically the article was talking about how there's this thing that they call the Keystone Habit, which is a single behavior that sets off a chain reaction of other positive habits throughout the day. So in the article, they talk about how many successful people did something every morning to start off the day. The example they used was how Beethoven would count beans in the morning, which there's no relation to beans in music, but it just required intense focus. And that's just what he did every morning. That's how he started off his day. And I've noticed as I get more busy, I could read something and then my mind could be just drifting off, just all over the place, or I could be doing anything really, not just reading. Just hi.
Well, me too. I mean specifically with reading though, is for me, I'll read something pages and then realize I didn't retain 1 ounce of that information. It's because there's just so much stimulation in today's world that there's other things on your mind or whatnot. Like, it seems in order to actually retain information, you have to have such an intense focus. And it didn't used to be like that. I think when we were younger and we had less things to worry about, you could read a book and just be, you know, completely encapsulated in that world and, you know, be able to focus on it. So, but what does that mean for us? You can't stay young. You know what I mean? So this isn't Peter Pan. You're going to have to grow up, but how are you going to, you know, keep that focus? And this is one way.
And yeah, I feel like a lot of people would say, like, oh, like, maybe they have ADD and a bunch of other stuff. But a lot of it's just the outside stimulation. There is a lot of it. There's TV, social media, just people around you. Just everything's so polarized nowadays. Just it's hard to keep your focus on stuff, you know?
Right. And it's hard to figure out what's important, because you could be focused on something that, like, arouses a certain amount of emotion, like let's say something you see on social media, but how important is that to your life? You know, it's a lot of things that are really important to your development or to your decision making in some cases aren't the most interesting, you know what I mean? So something that's really important, like something to do with your taxes or your, you know, money or the bank statements or something, you don't even care about. But how do you focus on something that is that important? How do you focus on that book that's teaching you how to, you know, learn a new skill when all you can think about is the most recent political breaking
well,
news.
Well, not even that. The amount of people who are paying attention to, I think, Tristan, the person who's like dating Khloe Kardashian, cheated on her. God, that shit fucking is driving me insane. Like, you go on social media, that's like number one trending.
Well, that's another thing that's really shitty, I think, about just the current times is you can't blame like big media, or you can't blame Snapchat or Facebook from focusing on things that people are interested in and things that grab people's attention, because that's how they make money, by just covering the most popular topics. And that just happens to be the case that the most people are interested in things that don't really matter.
Yeah, so it's not so much
that, right. It's not so much, yeah, don't blame the platforms, but if anything, it's all the people that aren't focusing on the real important things. It's like, why aren't you? Like, I can't believe that you're really investing so much energy into something that doesn't help you, you know, advance in any way. I personally don't find it interesting. Like, so if that's me, you got to think there's other people like me. So maybe one day there'll be a new platform, whether it's social media or just some sort of news platform that focuses on things that are more important. And that's kind of what we're doing here, I guess, right?
Yeah. Well, we give our opinions, but I personally would love a platform that's just straight facts on just important things. Like, no opinions, just the straight facts. But
or do have opinions. Last thing, do have opinions, but clearly articulate that is what direction that opinion is pointed in. I think one of the biggest issues today with media is they have opinions, but then they pretend like there is no opinion there. Like, just admit it. Just admit what side you're leaning towards.
Yeah, they play it off as fact.
Right. That's an issue. It's dangerous. But anyways, if you need help focusing and creating better habits, here's the Keystone effect.
So the way the article explained the Keystone habit, they said that there's how you start it. There's three steps. You start at the end. So understand what change you want in your life. It can be as simple as waking up earlier or, hey, launching your own billion-dollar startup. Know what you want before you go about making large changes. Write it down and then work backwards. 2, create a daily routine of actions that energize you, whether that's taking a cold shower or morning acro yoga like Tim Ferriss. The important thing is persistence and make it a habit. 3, build momentum. Once you've started creating new habits, don't stop. The latest research states it can take between 18 to 254 days to form a new habit, 66 on average. So be like the domino and let other positive habits fall in place.
So, you know what the first thing I noticed here was, if you're comparing it to our big three from what the big three things it takes to be successful that we created on our own, which, by the way, if you guys don't know this, the things that me and Nick, most of our ideas, especially from back in the day, we created on our own. We weren't reading a whole bunch of stuff. This was just our own personal philosophy. But the big three are: know what you want, take massive action to get there, and don't let anything get in your way. Don't let anything or anyone stop you or get in your way. That sounds like the three right there. Start at the end. What's your goal? Create a daily routine. Take action. Build the habit. And then 3, build momentum. Don't let anything stop you. Just keep the perseverance up. I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting to see other people having the same conclusions as we have, and then see us have the same conclusions as other people.
Yeah, well, I think it also reinforces the fact that we're not just telling you guys some random heebie-jeebie. We're telling you stuff that lots of successful people do, lots of successful people think, and the way they work.
Right.
And when it comes to just you guys, the listeners, on a personal level, like, at first, the first couple of weeks are going to be, it's going to be like forced, but it's going to eventually get easier, like, once you build that momentum. Once you train your body and sometimes even your mind, then you won't really know what your life was before it.
Right. I think that's a big point here is, for the most part, what we talk about is how to build your mind and mental perseverance, because most people understand that physical, you know, endurance is important. It's easy to talk to someone, especially if they've been in high school and like played sports, you know, to talk to them about the importance of how to build your body. And they understand like, hey, I need to work out 3 days a week if I want to get stronger. You know what I mean? But no one ever uses the same principles for your mind. I mean, it says here 18 to 254 days. So 66 on average. So it takes like 2 months to build a strong habit. So what does that mean? You know, it means you have to force yourself to do it when you don't want to. I mean, people are willing to force themselves to do things physically they don't want to, but they're not willing to force themselves to, you know, focus on a goal or do a journal or, you know, learn something new. Oh, I can't figure this out. I spent 3 days reading articles or reading a book or learning something on YouTube, and I can't figure out how to learn this skill. Well, try spending the equivalent of 2 months worth of days trying to learn it. I guarantee you'll figure it out. And
well, even like a couple, this is almost a year ago. I haven't done it in a year, but I was doing this for a while. Every morning I would do either some Sudoku or a crossword or something like that, just to get my mind going, just to get it thinking a little bit. And that's what I would do in the morning. I thought it had positive effects.
It definitely does. I remember just taking math classes, and when you first see the information, you think to yourself, I have no idea what's going on here. Like, just no idea. Like, foreign language, no clue how to respond, how to get started, anything. But here's the interesting part about math. Once you learn it, you look back on it and go like, this is the easiest thing ever, just because you've learned it. You know what I mean? It's not like English where you still have to be innovative to like come up with new ideas or whatnot. It's once you've learned the math, it's easier than, you know, riding a bike. So when you're nervous about a new skill, just know that once you've learned it, it's simple. And it's to have that confidence and that perseverance just to start. Knowing you have to have enough confidence and enough belief in yourself to assume you're going to be successful and to expect nothing less than success out of yourself, and just start knowing that if you just put enough time and effort and build the habits, at the end of it, you're going to come out on top.
Mason and I were talking about the Keystone Habit, and he mentioned how he listened to Sam Harris, I guess, with Joe Rogan, or just Sam Harris in general. He has a podcast. If you don't know who Sam Harris is, he's just, I guess, a philosopher type-ish. He thinks about lots of different things, really. But one of his big things is meditation, and he has a meditation app. And that's just one of the things he says that separates yourself from, like, events and, like, separates you from everything that's happening around you and just helps you focus more on just the more important things.
His main philosophy on meditation, and I'm pretty sure that this is the philosophy on most meditation, but it's that what you're doing while meditating is trying to separate stimulation from yourself. You're basically trying to focus on yourself as just a being that's existing, and to think about everything else as just an outside stimulation. That means everything. That means, you know, from your girlfriend or boyfriend talking to you, to, you know, the money in your bank account, to the job that you're working, to literally the floor under your feet. Everything else is simply an outside stimulation that has effects on your life. And if you're able to not only see them as that, but to control them as what kind of outside stimulation do you want to allow into your life? You can focus. You can be in a situation where you have 10 different stimulants, 10 different things occurring to you at one time, and block 9 of them out to focus on the one thing that matters. And this is kind of a crazy example, but I found it really interesting, is he talked about pain. And when you're feeling pain, you don't like it, right? But what part of pain do you really hate? It's the thought of the pain that you just felt in the previous second, and the fear of the pain that you're going to feel in the next second. Because at that moment, that pain that you're feeling at that exact moment, you're enduring, you're surviving. So what are you really afraid of it, or are you just accepting what's happening at that moment, but just being afraid and thinking back on the pain that's in the second before that moment and the one in front? And, you know, there's, I guess, some examples of people who have been able to withstand extreme amounts of pain by simply detaching all the stimulation around them and just focusing on that exact moment. You know, it seems a little crazy, but I thought it was a good example. I thought it was interesting to say. I thought it was interesting to say the least that there's people out there that can endure extreme amounts of pain. But it kind of does just go to show that why would you ever let any sort of thought that you had in the past or anything that's going to happen to you in the future affect you? Because the only thing that matters is that exact moment.
Well, I think something that's somewhat like meditation is like having a journal or a diary or whatever you want to call it. Okay, so basically what we've said in meditation is basically you separate yourself from like basically all the stimulation, then you pick the stimulations you want. So if you had like a journal or a diary or whatever, and you were writing down all your thoughts or everything that's going on, and you just constantly kept note at it, then you could look back at it and be like, this is important, this is not. I shouldn't be focusing on this, and it helps you figure out what you can focus on, and if something's important, you've written it down, and now you can build on them.
Right. I mean, that's a great example. That's like the biggest purpose for a journal. And there's you'd be surprised how many extremely successful people journal for an hour every morning or an hour every evening. That will wake up, and every time an idea comes in their head, they write it down. You don't have to worry about remembering things, and you don't have to worry about what you're going to do in the future if you just have it all planned out for yourself. You know, instead of having that crazy dream idea once a week and never remembering it, and then having that same aha moment the next week, now you have it written down and you remember it, and then the next week you have the level two to that idea, and you build and build and build. It's interesting. And the same thing is with just the psychology of your brain. You know, 90% of your thoughts are related to each other in some way. So if you are consistently negative, you probably have negative thoughts. And this is one of the reasons why it's so hard to pull out of depression, is because you know you want to have positive thoughts, but you just keep having reoccurring negative thoughts. So what do you have to do? That's, I think, there's multiple facets to this situation here. One, that's why they say that little things have a huge impact, like cleaning your room, because now instead of living in this disgusting room, now you have like a clean room, you have a nice house. It's about putting yourself in positive situations, one, and then two, forcing yourself to have positive thoughts. And that's why I think you guys have probably heard where force yourself to smile, because when you force a smile, like, it releases serotonin or whatever in your brain, and it's real. It's real because you're forcing yourself to be happy.
There's an actual study on that says it will make you happier when you force yourself to smile. I've told a lot of people that, actually, because they would always not be smiling. But
the point is, really, is instead of just looking at, you know, meditation or positivity as some sort of like voodoo magic that isn't real, think of it as, yeah, it's not as simple as be happy, but it is as simple as work your ass off every day, all day, to be as positive and as, you know, as focused and as dedicated as you can, and do tasks that promote that, like journaling or meditating, and it'll, in the long run, it will actually have a significant impact. You just got to fucking go for it. You got to take the action, put in the effort. I mean, are you capable of doing that? I think everyone is.
That's all we got for that, but let's move on to our next topic, which which I think I personally,
we need better transitions. Yeah,
but I like our next topic. I'm just a huge fan of Elon Musk, but Tesla came out with the new Model 3. It's a sweet looking car, but basically Tesla and Musk, they're changing the game. Before, people would always say that Teslas or just electric cars in general are too expensive, and now Model 3, it's affordable. It's $35,000 for the standard package. It's got some autopilot, so if you don't feel like driving, want the car to drive you, there you go. And it looks like a luxury car. And this is not a Tesla ad. They do not sponsor our show yet. Elon, if you're listening to the show, I hope you're a big fan. We will sponsor Tesla on the show.
Well, I think one of the things that you didn't really hit on is Priuses are just ugly.
Oh, God.
So the big reason why people wouldn't buy electric cars is because the electric cars available were just like not cool in any way. So, but Tesla's definitely fixed that problem. They're amazing. Well,
if anyone who buys a Prius and they say, oh, it's because I'm... The only reason someone buys a Prius is so they could say they're helping the environment. There is zero reason to buy a Prius. The space, I don't think it's too spacious. It's just like a normal hatchback, I guess. And it's ugly looking. Only reason is so someone could say, I'm protecting the environment. Look at me, look at me.
which what I've heard is that, strangely enough, that they need to have their batteries replaced so often that, one, it's not even that cost effective, and two, that it's pretty bad on the environment to get new batteries. But regardless, I don't need to get into that conversation. I don't have the facts to back it up, so we'll just slide that. The real reason why we're talking about this in general is to show how important innovation is. You know, a couple years ago, electric cars were not a thing. Now it is. Not only are they important now, but they're so good and so advanced that I would not be surprised if within the near future, they are the standard, you know? And what does that mean? To me, it means that the way that technology is advancing at such a high speed in today's world, you either have to advance with it or you'll get left behind, you know? If what happens if instead of electric cars being a small percentage of overall world cars, what happens if they become 99% of world cars, and then gasoline becomes obsolete? Where are you gonna fill your car up at? You know what I mean? So you're gonna have to advance with the times.
Well, I wouldn't even say just that aspect. I think it's also the aspect of it has autopilot. It can drive on its own. Truck drivers are like in the top five of most common jobs. You know what I mean? Uber drivers, Lyft drivers, all of it. Taxi drivers.
Truck drivers is the biggest one.
That's the biggest one. And when we talked about Andrew Yang that one time, that's what he's talking about, the automation.
Well, not only that, but I believe I read another article that was speaking on car insurance. What's going to happen to car insurance companies when the availability for human error is driven so far down that there's not accidents anymore? Because that's where car insurance companies make their money off of. You know what I mean? Is the predictability of steady accidents. So what happens when there's no more accidents? Is there no more car insurance? And therefore, what happens to all those businesses?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's going to change the whole system. But I guess the main aspect of this, which we talk about a lot, is just always trying to improve yourself. Always trying to learn new skills, and learning new skills hasn't been easier than now. We have the internet, we have tons of books, we have Skillshare, which has a bunch of mini classes on a bunch of different skills. I'm doing a Skillshare right now for photography because I enjoy it.
And one of the best ways to learn stuff nowadays is to teach it to yourself. And most people don't know this, but one of the things with standardized education, which by standardized education, I just mean school, high school, college, to some extent, is it's free. So people don't have as much respect for the importance of it. So then they retain a lot less information. You know what I mean? So one of the best things about self-teaching, and this isn't just me speaking for myself, this is a legitimate, like, proven reality, is that you get way more out of teaching yourself something because, one, you're not only picking a topic that you want to learn that is interesting to you, but you're putting in effort on your own time to learn it, so you're going to retain it because you want to retain it. You know, it's not like high school geometry that you don't care about because you're thinking about, I was going to say that burrito you got in your lunchbox, but that's probably just my fat ass thinking about that.
I was thinking about food.
Right. But for real, it's true. And Nick said it perfectly that it's never been easier to have access to information and teach yourself. What you can learn online, I mean, people have always said it about YouTube, but if you even went a little bit farther than that and you spend $100 on some class, you could teach yourself a skill that is synonymous with, you know, got damn near an entire degree, but you taught it to yourself online in a weekend. You know what I mean? It's the world's has never been more available for you to learn things, but it's also has never required that you learn things more. So all I'm saying is the world is changing. It's going to be a requirement that you adapt with it. So you can either say that you're upset that the times are changing, or you can just embrace it and realize that you have the ability to learn whole new sets of skills and be ready to embrace it. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I remember seeing on Twitter how, or like someone got suspended on Twitter for saying like learn to code to somebody, because people were taking offense, like, oh, you're saying learn to code because your job's not important, or a bunch of little crybaby stuff. But and what they're saying is you don't necessarily need to learn how to code, but you need to advance with society. That's what society is doing. Society needs more coders. But
that's true.
But you gotta advance and start learning. And like I said, read books. I mean, this school has ruined books for a lot of people. Books are very important. Books have lots of knowledge. Join groups of people who think like you. If those of you who like to spend a bunch of time on social media, there's Facebook groups of probably anything you can think of.
Well, there's also one thing about that I'd like to mention. I was reading an article. It was mainly talking about the Hollywood style job market. But what it was saying was that you can become extremely more successful based on the people that you surround yourself with and like the friends that you have and the connections you have therefore because of it, than no matter how much time that you spend, you know, effort wise. And that's another thing that it kind of leads into is the overarching idea that there's this misconception that hard work is what creates success. And that's, there's nothing wrong with working hard, but it also depends on like how smart you work. And I know that this is mainly talking about, you know, actors getting famous, have some famous friends, and that's how you get more prestige or whatnot. But the other reality of it is, I know personally that going straight to the source and having a conversation with someone who's an expert at something, I've learned so much more in a 10-minute conversation than I have, you know, doing an incredible amount of like research or trying to learn something, because they just tell you exactly the important points. You know what I mean? So surround yourself with people that are in the situation that you want to be in, especially if you want to be something like an entrepreneur. You know, there's books on it, but you still are going to encounter certain situations that aren't always describable, because it's a very dynamic, you know, career path. So just become friends with other entrepreneurs and they'll be happy to help you. I know this from personal experience. I want nothing more than, well, not only have I talked to people that were totally open to helping me, but I want nothing more than to help other people. I love when someone comes to me and asks for some sort of advice or some sort of help, because, I mean, honestly, it makes you feel good. It proves that someone like believes that you are successful enough to give advice. So to think that someone would ever not share the secrets with you is crazy. There's no one that's going to try to hold on to the secrets to success as if it's some sort of, you know, highly guarded information.
Yeah, people are always out there trying to help. Well, most people are willing to help, and that's why it's important to join groups and or just locally, someone who's doing the same thing you're trying to do, ask them for advice. Sure, they'd be happy to help.
Right. But in other news, the world is definitely a turbulent place. And if you thought that inside America was crazy, let's look outside. That was my little transition there. I think it was pretty good. But anyways.
I think it's okay. I don't know which one's better, mine or yours. They were both a lot.
Right. So what this is one of the things is with all the news that's been going on, whether people are focusing on Trump or they're focusing on whatever the other stupid stuff that Nick was talking about was.
The Kardashians.
Whatever. One of the big ones is India versus Pakistan. And that's kind of what I want to talk about. One, because it's just huge, because there could be potential for some sort of like international conflict, even though I think that's unlikely. But also you just to see the way things interact outside of the country. So if you guys didn't know, India and Pakistan are arch enemies that live right on the border with each other. Basically, in 1947, in the partition that British gave India its independence, not only was India granted independence, but the country of Pakistan was created. And one of the unfortunate issues that led to the deaths of 500,000 people, which people will say like it's something small, but 500,000 people died and millions were displaced, was this northern mountainous region called Kashmir. Currently, a big portion is controlled by India, the largest portion. It's called Jammu. Then the next biggest portion is controlled by Pakistan, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce that region. And then there's also a region on the northeastern side controlled by China, but no one really messes with China because China is such a hard hitter. Anyways, the recent news is there was a suicide bombing that killed 40 Indian troops about 2 weeks ago, and these were Pakistani Sunni militants, in other words, terrorists. Then, more recently, Indian Air Force bombed these jihadi camps, but this was across the border, meaning these were camps inside of Pakistan, which is the first time that India has attacked across the border since the 70s. Followed by that, Pakistani military people downed two Indian fighter jets, arresting one of the pilots, which they are currently claiming to want to trade back to India as a show of peace. So that's really what is the situation. But anyways, it's huge. And people think it's not huge, because I think one of the biggest reasons that people don't see this as an issue is simply we've had world peace for however long. I mean, other than the current military conflicts the U.S. are in, but we haven't had a major world war. People don't see the ability for a major conflict between these two countries to pull in, you know, so many other nations, first of all. And second of all, just thinking about the populations that they have, you know, India has the biggest population. What happens if they go to war with Pakistan? And I'll just kind of follow the train here a little bit. Pakistan currently is being invested in by China. Like, one of the biggest billions of dollars a year are getting invested in Pakistan by China. So what does China now have a stake in the game? Are they going to go to war with India to defend its rights inside of Pakistan? It just shows you kind of how convoluted it is. Do you have anything to say, Nick? Or should I get into the nuclear portion of this history lesson?
I like what you were mentioning towards the end right there, how, like, we think just India and Pakistan, two, like, smaller on the world scale nations, but, like, how much of an impact that would have. Like, Pakistan is also allies with not just China, but other Middle Eastern countries. India, I'm pretty sure, is an ally with the United States and other Western European countries, there's a possibility of a conflict. It's a thing.
There is.
It's an issue.
There's a possibility of something similar to World War I, where different countries are pulled in just based on treaties that they have. And America's actually had issues in the recent history with upholding their ends of treaties. I mean, technically, the actions that China has taken in the South China Sea would dictate some sort of military response by the U.S. in defense of Vietnam and the Philippines, but we haven't done it, and that kind of, you know, is heightening tensions. But the biggest thing here is that these are nuclear countries. No one really talks about this, and I think a big reason why people don't understand the importance of this situation is because we live in a nuclear country. We live in either America or Western Europe that has nukes, and therefore we assume that nukes are just some old-time technology that we have good control over and, you know, have treaties in place to prevent their use. But the reality of the situation is that there's 9 countries that are currently nuclear. There's the United States, Russia, Britain, France, China. Those are the big 5. Also, they happen to be the big 5 that are permanent members of the UN Security Council. Then you have 4 other countries, India, Pakistan, North Korea, and Israel, although Israel pretends they don't have nukes. So there's not that many countries that actually possess nuclear weapons. And the fact that this conflict is such a primal conflict between 2 nations that are not only have them, but they're not even the most stable countries, is dangerous. If you guys want to just quickly, the 3 pillars of the nuclear non-proliferation agreement is the first one, non-proliferation. Countries that have nukes, don't give them to countries that don't, first of all, and countries that don't have nukes, don't try to acquire them. 2, disarmament. Countries that have nukes are supposed to decrease the amount of nukes that they have. This has been big for the US and Russia, who have both decreased the amount of nukes significantly, although we still have them, and we still have them most. And then 3, the peaceful use of nuclear energy, where countries that we deem peaceful are allowed to have nuclear energy. But it still just goes to show how, you know, convoluted this can get. And I think that that's why this particular instance is so important. And to show you that the entire balance of the nuclear world can be brought into play here and can be changed at, you know, the flip of the hat. What happens if, you know, these 2 countries go to war, Pakistan and India, and then one country is losing? Like, one country is, their entire existence is threatened. Do you expect them not to use the nukes simply because we've signed some sort of treaty? I don't think you can expect that of them.
Well, essentially what I'm getting from what you're saying is that we can all die from nuclear attack at any moment. So basically start dreaming big and start going after things, right? Is that what you're saying?
That's the biggest point here. And that's who a smart thinker and someone who has the proper mindset would, the way they would look at it. But it's also just saying that you think this isn't a big deal. I promise you it is. It's a huge deal. And then,
well, seriously, stuff that happens, like our foreign policy and just foreign policies of other countries around the world, have an impact on our lives. Well, we may not think it, but just a simple war between Iran and Saudi Arabia could easily have us send more troops there.
Right. People have no idea about that conflict either. Everyone knows about, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan. I think that those are big issues, but that's small potatoes. The 2 power players of the Middle East are Saudi Arabia and Iran, who are arch enemies for multiple reasons. A lot of it is religious, Sunni versus Shia, but a lot of it is just control of power in the region. And one of the issues is that Saudi Arabia is our main ally, particularly against Iran. So what happens if Saudi Arabia acquires nukes? Currently, the U.S. is working on a deal to provide Saudi Arabia with nuclear energy. And then what happens then when Saudi Arabia converts those that nuclear energy into a nuclear weapon? You know the first thing that's going to happen? Iran's going to want nukes. That's the biggest thing. People think that, you know, one country acquiring nukes isn't that big of a deal. But what happens when they do? Then it's not only do they have nukes, but all their enemies are going to do whatever it takes to acquire nukes themselves. That's one of the biggest reasons why the U.S. has never attacked Pakistan, is because Pakistan has nuclear weapons.
Well, yeah, well, a lot of people say, or what I've heard some people say, is that a lot of these countries want nukes just so they get respected on the world stage. But
right.
And I understand about giving other countries respect and all that, but all it takes is one crazy leader to start blowing stuff because they get angry, you know?
That's exactly the point here. Pakistan is extremely militant, bordering on the line of supporting terrorism, but they're our ally. Big reason that's the case is because they have nuclear weapons. I don't know, but all I'm saying is I'm personally nervous for all-out conflict between India and Pakistan, two nuclear nations, and to make things even worse, you guys probably definitely haven't heard about this, but the U.S. offers $1 million for information leading to the capture of Hamza bin Laden. You thought we were done with the bin Ladens? We're not. Hamza is the son of Osama, and he's been groomed since his entire life to take over as the head of Al-Qaeda. He's been releasing messages to the world since 2015. And he is currently making the transition into being the head of the Al-Qaeda organization. And if the importance of that is... Right now, a lot of the world's terrorists are very fragmented because they have, you know, different leaders that they started following since the death of Osama bin Laden. But they all, and this is interesting, the vast majority of the world's terrorists all pledged allegiance to Osama. And now having, a bloodline being his son in charge means that all of their oaths, you know, pass to this guy. So now we could see a resurgence and a unification of the world's terrorists back to the Al-Qaeda organization. Not really a whole lot to touch on because it's still a new event where there's not a whole lot of facts surrounding it, so I wouldn't dare give too big of an opinion on it. But I'm simply stating that the world is very dynamic, and especially foreign policy. And for Americans to not keep these things in mind is, I think, a mistake.
Well, yeah. Well, most people see foreign policy as like a simple idea or like simple things, simple solutions. But at the end of the day, there's millions of moving pieces. And I guess the best way for us to like relate it to freedom and power standards now is that your life is going to have a million different moving pieces, and it may not be simple solutions. You're going to have to figure out how to make a decision and stay on your path, and you're going to have to realize that you're going to have to make some tough decisions.
Oh, definitely. You're definitely going to. It's people see. And this is a positive thing. This is, even if you have a goal and you have a set path and you're like, this is the path that I need to stay on to achieve my goal. People think that simply making the decision to stay, they just have to decide, I'm going to stay on my path, and it's going to get them to their goal. But it's a little bit deeper than that even. It's this constantly turbulent and changing world is going to be pulling you off of your path. And you have to make decisions to continue to climb back onto it. Your path is going to change. It's not just like, oh, well, I have my goal and I'm willing to put some effort in to achieve it, and therefore I'm good. It's, no, I need to every day continue to work towards achieving it and to make sure that I'm making the best decisions to, you know, adapt and to overcome this turbulent and changing world.
Well, yeah, and a lot of mistake that people make when there's a bunch of million things coming their way, they don't think to change their path, to adjust their plan. They think to adjust their goal.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest mistakes.
Yeah, they think that they need to adjust their end goal because I guess they think it's easier. And it is easier most of the time to do that.
Well, not only that, but this is a perfect way to tie in the whole meditation thing that we were talking about, is that everything is just an outside stimulation on your life. So someone will, you know why a lot of reason why people change their end goal is because they see stimulation in their life, factors of their life, as unchangeable. They say, well, this is something that's happening to me currently, and that is unchangeable. So therefore, what's easier to change, my goal or that thing? And then they choose to change their goal. But the way you need to look at it is the goal is unchangeable no matter what. At the end of the day, never change the goal. And everything else is simply an outside stimulation. And if you can see it as that, if you can see, you know, your car breaking down, or let's make it bigger, your house burning down, as just simply an outside stimulation. You know what I mean? You get fired from your job. Is that something that is a major factor where now your goal screwed up because of it? Or is that just a much larger, albeit, but still simply an outside stimulation that you have to not let affect your goal and just find a way to hop back on that path to success and keep pushing forward? You know, it's just how you want to look at it. It's what's more important to you. Is that goal really? And this goes into goal setting too. We continue to say it. Your goal needs to be something that you want and desire so much that you're willing to upturn your entire life to achieve it. You know, so if that's not the case, then maybe you don't really know what your goal is yet.
Your goal needs to be something that isn't worth changing.
Right. It is. And trust me, me and Nick understand it. Me and Nick have, what's interesting is we have slightly different goals, but they're in line so effectively that that's why it's easy for us to work together and to help each other achieve our goals. So, you know, but I can tell you for sure one thing that there's nothing getting in the way of me and my goal or Nick and his goal. That's for sure. And this is a definite way that we're getting there, is by doing things like this podcast and helping other people. A big part of my goal is to, you know, do something good for this world. And I think that this helps that out, one. And two, this helps us focus our ideas. It helps us learn new things. It helps us come up with new mental pathways and new patterns and new, you know, things that we have to do to move forward. You know, and all around, it's a good thing.
And to tie everything together, practically, you need to have awareness of all the moving pieces using keystone habits or meditation journals, just being aware of all the outside stimulations, understand the importance of everything, and if something's important or not important, and be able to make decisions, complex decisions or simple decisions, and have a goal and be on a path, be willing to change that path, and do anything possible to get to where you want to go.
It's pretty simple. It's pretty simple.
That's how you connect Tesla, Keystone Habit, and Pakistan versus India, right there.
It's just the mindset, guys. It's just the mindset that you have to achieve, and it's a way that you view the world and the things going on around you. And I think if you continue to listen to our podcast and try to not only just listen to what we have to say, but then actively try to enact the different things that you learn here on your own, you'll be surprised. I know me and Nick are surprised. Me and Nick are, it's crazy how much we've learned in the past couple of years. Just putting in a little bit of effort I mean, we've obviously increased, that's another thing, we've obviously increased our effort exponentially over the past couple months and years. But you got to start out small. You got to start out somewhere. So just give it a go. Get a piece of paper, get a little post-it note, put it on your bedside table, and write down what you want and three things you got to do to achieve it. It's easy. Give it a go. Anyways, we'll definitely be talking to you guys soon about some things that hopefully aren't nuclear war. Talk to you next time.